Now, as we enter the sacred time and space of our sanctuary, please welcome today's guest speaker, Reverend Amy Beltane, helps givers, helpers, and justice makers who are going through life changes and feel adrift, disconnected, or depleted by offering spiritual mentoring, Sunday services, and retreats. She lives in Portland, Oregon, very close by, with her spouse Hawthorne, bonus son Jack, a beagle, and a cat. Amy is past president of the Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans and on the steering council for the UU Spiritual Directors Network. She travels with her portable home, visiting UU congregations throughout the Southwest in the cool months and in the Northwest in the warm months. Amy aspires to become a love ninja. After the service, you can meet with Amy at noon in the forest room to ask about earth-relating spiritualities. Amy.
In my mid-40s, I transformed my life. I moved from upstate New York back to the Willamette Valley in Oregon while my 16-year marriage crumbled and I coped with the news of my mother's cancer diagnosis. At the same time, I was transforming my occupation from middle manager to minister. A few years later, I embarked on another transformation. I fell in love with a wonderful person, and we were discussing getting married. My sweetie told me that they wanted to make the transition to shift their gender presentation, their name and their body, to match their true gender identity. I wasn't all that surprised. It was abundantly clear that my beloved was masculine in brain and behavior, despite their name and the body they moved through the world in. On the other hand, it was a new adventure for me. I practiced using his correct pronouns, which in his case are he and him, and eventually stopped messing up as often. And as time passed, his transition unfolded, and he became more his true self, his whole self. It was like he gained definition. His true colors had been muted, blurred, obscured, and now they shine through. This adventure together is still joyful, even with all the bumps and the hard parts. For me, our transition together meant I embarked on a personal metamorphosis from lesbian to queer. And in some ways, that transformation allows me to shine forth in all of my true colors as well. We had a fabulous wedding, him in his suit, me in my dress. Over the years, the rest of the family is transforming in other ways, becoming the parent of a son, the child of a trans man, the sibling of a brother. We're all transforming. I first read God Got a Dog poems many years ago, but they didn't feel transformative. They just sat there, and they didn't dance in my heart and my brain. And then a few weeks ago, someone invited me to experience God in these poems as the indwelling divine, the universal divine. Divine is visible in the people around us and ourselves. Poof! Those words on paper became prayers, vibrating with life. The readings transformed again when I replaced every he and she with they. As I spoke them aloud, I felt that tickle in my brain and the tension in my body that means I'm being changed and that something new and beautiful is being born. This morning's hymn, Bring Many Names. It was written to help us broaden our assumptions about the divine. It reverses the cliche gender roles for God, mixing in mother and father. But then for this morning, I took the gender out. Instead of he and she, we sang they. If we grew up in the same culture I did, your brain probably provided you with the gendered images for nurturer and protector. My mental slideshow provided a female for nurturer and a male for creator. Isn't that something? I grew up with a feminist mother, and I still, this binary gender role stuff sneaks into my thinking. Still some work to do. I find that one of my best assets when seeking transformation is curiosity. So my experience with this morning's hymn, since I've done this a couple times now, singing it through that way, it makes me question what I felt. What were the images for me? And my curious questions then are, how has my brain been trained to make these assumptions? When are the gender assumptions helpful, and when are they harmful? In Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, he talks about the ways we instantly know things. Sometimes what we know in a blink is exactly right, because it's made from deep knowledge that's become unconscious, like the museum curator who knew that a statue was fake despite all the evidence to the contrary. He followed his hunch, and eventually he uncovered the flaw that proved he was right. Sometimes what we instantly know is exactly wrong, because it's made from false knowledge that was installed into us by our broken world, like police officers who shoot a black man, because the officers have an instant assumption of danger. The man shot by the police while laying on the pavement assisting an autistic man asked, "Why did you shoot me?" The officer answered, "I don't know." I read Blink several years ago. It gave me the gift of hope. When we know that our automatic assumptions exist, we can change our false knowing. It starts with questioning why we believe the things or assume things. It continues by wondering what else might be true, what else might be untrue. We're transformed when we immerse ourselves into new stories, the true life stories about people who are different from us. We can also shift to true knowing by direct experience. Interacting with others gives us the kind of knowing that vibrates with life. We can practice the transformation by changing how we use language. When we stay open and curious about the next thing, we will learn and grow. Consider our UU covenant. Revelation is not sealed. What a rainbow of beauty happens when we expand our ways of thinking and new neurological paths are created. What happens in those moments, what unfolds from there, creates more love in the world. So let's exercise some curiosity now and review what gender nonconforming is about. The first thing that I want to say is that every queer, non-binary, or transgender person is little like every Unitarian Universalist. They are not, by any stretch of the imagination, the same. Plus, we're all learning and changing every moment. What I knew for sure 10 years ago, I've had to change since then. So let me share some of what I know today. First, binary. Feminism taught us decades ago that strict gender roles were painful for the complex human beings we stuffed into those pink and blue boxes. The binary assumes there's only two ways to be: woman, all sugar and spice and everything nice, and man, with snips and snails and puppy dog tails. What is a snip, anyway? We now know that there are many more than two ways of being, and we can still learn more about the spectrum of identity and expression. So let's back up a little. Sex and gender are different. Sex is usually described as male or female, and it has to do with chromosomes and body parts folks are born with, though some folks are born intersex and features of both are present in one body. Doctors and parents have been trying to figure out gender for years and doing a poor job of it. Since the most important person isn't consulted, and the kid is raised the way the doctor assigned them at birth, sometimes the sex assigned at birth really didn't fit. One obvious example is the person whose doctor botched a circumcision and then told the parents to raise their child as a girl. It's not that simple. That didn't go so well. Over the last several decades, we've learned that even for folks whose chromosomes and body parts seem to all match, they might not match what's happening in the brain. And that leads us to gender. If sex refers to what's between our legs, gender identity is best understood as what's between our ears. Gender expression is how other people experience you, what's between you and the other people. So most people, but not all people, have a gender identity that matches the sex they're assigned at birth. People who match, we can call cisgender. Cis is the Latin for same. So basically, your sex and your gender match. But remember, don't assume. You might want to ask each person. That's why we've been saying our gender pronouns today. It's a complex and difficult thing when your gender identity doesn't match your body or what people perceive you to be. For some people, the conflict between their gender identity and their biological sex is so painful that they yearn to transition. Folks who don't fit the gender binary are often referred to as the umbrella term trans with an asterisk. Some trans folks find their sweet spot somewhere short of shifting to the opposite gender. Some may claim their pronouns or change their name and call that good. Some, if they have the option, obtain medical help, such as hormones, to make their bodies match their true gender. Folks who don't have medical options may go through other painful and dangerous attempts to adjust their bodies to match their brains. Without decent, respectful medical care and access to jobs and resources, trans people suffer and die at alarming rates. Some folks who can may choose to have gender-conforming surgeries, and these can vary, but here's a tip. If you aren't sleeping with someone, what's in their pants is none of your business. What you do want to ask is, what are your pronouns? Non-binary, transgender, queer, and non-conforming folks have been around forever, so each person has had to find their own way to exist. For some, that meant passing as the gender they knew they were. For some, that meant being two-spirit or berdash in a culture that allowed for that. For some, that meant living fiercely unconventional lives despite an unaccepting culture, like Gertrude Stein. And for some, like Brandon Tina, that meant an early death. Not all cultures and times have been unaccepting of trans folk. One way to discover acceptance is to look to the images of the divine in a culture. Rabbi Mark Sameth has written, "The four-letter Hebrew name of God, which scholars refer to as the Tetragrammaton, the YHWH, was probably not pronounced Yehovah or Yahweh, as some have guessed. The Israelite priests would have read the letters in reverse as Hu He. In other words, the hidden name of God was Hebrew for He-She. Counter to everything we grew up believing, the God of Israel, the God of the three monotheistic Abrahamic religions to which fully half of the people on the planet today belong, was understood by its earliest worshippers to be a dual-gendered deity. Throughout the Hebrew Bible, key figures are referred to by various pronouns. Why would the Bible do this? These aren't typos. Gender fluidity was the mark of a civilized person in ancient Mesopotamia. In Egypt, the gods were thought of as gender fluid, and human beings were considered reflections of the gods. When I first was introduced to Amaterasu, I was told that the Chinese symbol of compassion was a goddess, definitely female. Then I learned more about Buddhism. Amaterasu is a manifestation of Buddha, definitely male. Buddha was, we're taught, a prince. a male teacher in India. But Amaterasu is a gender-fluid, gender-neutral bodhisattva of compassion who appears in male, in female, and in ambiguous manifestations in China and in Japan. If the biblical God can be gender-fluid, and Buddha can be gender-fluid, and so can lots of other deities around the world, then we have mythological support for the gifts of transformation. We have support for freedom from the binary. It's a crying shame that this religious insight hasn't always won through to the religious and secular practice in our societies. Though it's been hard, gender-fluid, non-binary, and trans folks have existed and have been part of a transformation, even in cultures where they are outsiders, oppressed, and marginalized. Trans people are around and have always been around. Trans people need and deserve justice and love, like everyone else. Solidarity and community has helped people rise up against oppression and care for one another. Like the people of Black Lives Matter, the Poor People's Campaign, they grow tired of dying. They grow tired of being marginalized. June was Gay Pride Month, but every person matters every month. The 49th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots was just 2 weeks ago. The first person to fight against the police in Stonewall was a biracial black butch lesbian named Stormé Delaverée. Afterwards, the New York protests were led by Nis Major, a black trans woman, Marsha Payette-Namine Johnson, a black non-binary person, and Sylvia Rivera, a Latina trans woman. Our work is not done. We not only need to transform ourselves and our congregations, but also our communities and our world. Last year at General Assembly, we voted to change women and men to people in our sources. Yay. A couple weeks ago, again at the urging of our trans UUs, our youth and our allies, the voters at GA acted to make our bylaws gender inclusive. We replaced gender binary language, the he's and the she's, the men and the women, with the inclusive pronouns they throughout the bylaws. The conversation was not without counter-argument and distress. But the process moved forward with a lot of respect and ultimately with a resounding yes vote. How shall we bring this back home? We can start by listening to the LGBTQIAA folks here. And to our youth, right here in this congregation. The divine is always unfolding within and around us. This transformation is sometimes messy, but always deep down, it's beautiful. The divine inventor is constantly creating us anew. When we look upon ourselves and others with God's eyes, we will say, beautiful. And mean it. If you've considered becoming an activist or making change as a school board member, maybe, or you've considered becoming active as a local government rep or a neighborhood canvasser, if you've considered learning more and talking to the folks in your community, this right now is a good time to do it. Transformation takes work. It takes internal work. It takes work with the people out there in the world. It takes failing forward, making the mistakes, gathering yourself up and trying again. The truth is, the divine includes all of us. In Wizard of Oz, Dorothy discovered that her somewhere over the rainbow was actually back home where she started. This is the day we have been given. How shall we use it? Love is calling. How shall we answer?
Thank you, Reverend Amy. Thank you for that very timely and thoughtful journey into what for some of us may be familiar territory, and for others perhaps an alien, often confusing new reality. As UUs, we always try to get it right, and you've helped us today.